Hello, everyone, and welcome to Veterinary Vertex, a podcast of the AVMA Journals. I'm Lisa Fortier, editor-in-chief of the AVMA Journals, and I'm joined by co-host and social media editor for our journals, Dr. Sarah Wright.
We are bringing you a special episode with our guests, Dr. Ryan Appleby, assistant professor of diagnostic imaging in the Department of Clinical Studies at the Ontario Veterinary College, and Dr. Parminder Basran, associate research professor in the section of medical oncology in the Department of Clinical Sciences at Cornell University. We're going to talk about their May 2022 JAVMA and HAVR, Currents in One Health Manuscripts, Artificial Intelligence in Veterinary Medicine, and the Unmet Potential of Artificial Intelligence in Veterinary Medicine. Parminder and Ryan, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right, let's dive right in. Thank you for authoring some of the first Currents in One Health Manuscripts for JAVMA and HAVR. The concept of One Health is highly varied. What does One Health mean to you and your program? Let's start with Ryan.
Yeah, thanks. You know, for me, One Health, I have a fairly narrow definition of. I think it truly needs to be something that occurs at that intersection of animal health, human health, and the environment. And so I don't feel that technically what I do personally is true One Health work. I think that I work in a translational and interdisciplinary field where my research as it surrounds diagnostic imaging for veterinary medicine and artificial intelligence have applications to some of these other areas. And I certainly think that artificial intelligence can occupy the space of One Health, and there will be some important future applications of it in that area. But I personally don't drive that in my program.
Thank you very much. How about you, Parminder?
Well, to me, this sort of really broad concept of One Health sort of touches on this sort of connectedness of all forms of life and how we use the scientific method to maintain or achieve sustainability on our planet. And so in a very broad context, you know, you can kind of think of many of our AI projects have a One Health kind of dimension. With regards to some of the work we're doing, there's a couple of projects that have this kind of connection. There's one project that we have that's related to dairy cows and mastitis detection. So we have we deploy machine learning methods to see if we can do a better job or automate some of the diagnoses that happen on these large commercial dairy farms. And this obviously has an impact on milk quality and agricultural sustainability. The whole concept of digital agriculture is really exciting. Another thing that we're doing in our lab that doesn't really have an AI connection, but we're doing some research on, which has a One Health dimension on things like osteosarcoma cells and how human cancer cell lines differ from canine cancer cell lines, osteosarcoma cell lines, and their responses to radiation and different forms of radiation. So, you know, very broadly, you know, you can think of a lot of different ways that the work we do in veterinary medicine has a connection in a broader realm. And I think that there are some other really interesting themes out there, such as using sensors and image data from service animals. And really, there's just so many, you know, interesting opportunities.
Artificial intelligence is really in its infancy still in all professions. What were the clinical challenges that led your groups down this path? Do you remember any specific cases?
I think for me, it's the fact that it's in its infancy and seeing this sort of novel technology start to make some foray into veterinary medicine that has really driven my interest. So I like to follow at least some of the literature and some of the topics that are kind of hot topics or of interest in human medicine. And certainly we tend to follow, you know, a few years behind what they're doing. And artificial intelligence there within their imaging field has been, a huge, huge thing for the past, 5 to almost 10 years now. And I think that, you know, what we're seeing on our side is that there can be some huge potential applications and that the challenges that are faced by researchers and veterinarians is now figuring out what best way to start to utilize that. And so that opportunity, you know, for myself as an early career researcher, just it seemed like a really interesting opportunity. And so I started to engage more with it. And I had the opportunity to work with some folks here in the computer science department at the University of Guelph. And that really led me to start to investigate this further. And so I don't think I have one specific use case or specific thing in mind that really drove it, but the overall opportunity is what's driven my interest and drives my lab group forward.
Yeah, so there's a lot of similarities in this approach, even though that I have a completely different background. My background is in radiation oncology medical physics, where my role is to, well, for the last 20 years, was to ensure that when human cancer patients receive radiation medicine in some form, it's done so as safely as possible and accurately as possible. So it's a different world coming into this space. But one of the really interesting sort of similarities here is that radiotherapy leverages a lot of sophisticated hardware and software. And in a lot of ways, they can be considered black boxes. And so we're constantly dealing with this challenge of integrating or using or deploying these sort of black box technologies into our clinical practice. And this has a lot of similarities with AI and the way that AI has been implemented in healthcare, in human healthcare, and more likely in veterinary medicine, where, you know, these things are kind of these nebulous black boxes, and we don't really know how to safely implement these technologies. But having this sort of background, I'm really motivated by these kinds of things, like how do we make these really complex systems work in our clinical environments? And so, you know, having that background and then looking at this AI black box and saying, wow, how do we make this work in veterinary medicine is something that I find really exciting. And all the spectrums of problems and challenges that you face when you're dealt with something like AI, a nebulous problem like AI in your clinical practice. And so I think in terms of some of my challenges, I think it's really trying to, not being a veterinarian, I think the biggest challenge is really trying to understand the clinical issues, you know, and the use cases. So I try to connect with all sorts of veterinary specialists, like radiologists and oncologists and small and large animal specialists, and as frequently as possible, and just try to absorb as much as possible in terms of what kinds of clinical challenges they face, and having some knowledge about AI, you know, thinking about how might we be able to connect the dots between these really fascinating AI technologies and their clinical problems. You know, like this example I gave about the cattle, the dairy cow stuff was really, you know, a radiologist came into my office and said, hey, you know, I have to do this stuff, and it's like really laborious, and you know, working in a large dairy farm is not a very pleasant environmental situation. So you know, so he says, you know, why can't we use, you know, machine learning to do these kinds of things? And I, those are the kinds of things that I just love, tackling these really strange, weird, challenging problems with AI.
Yeah, thank you both. I learned a bunch reading both your manuscripts, and you guys really make a great team to tackle both the practical side and then where are the knowledge gaps in research. Ryan Parminder spoke a little bit about a practical application in dairy. How would you see in average practitioners, the general practitioner that's out there, where do you think the first sign of artificial intelligence will pop up in their practice?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and it might lead to a bit of a controversial, or at least a topic that has a few different sides to it. I think that practitioners, especially in small animal practice and a little bit of equine practice as well, are really starting to see artificial intelligence pop up now with respect to diagnostic imaging. And so part of the reason that I think Parminder and I are so interested in this is because of the wealth of data that we have within our imaging data sets, both for, you know, the radiation oncology and physics side of it, and then the diagnostic imaging side of it. We have these huge data sets, and that's one of the reasons why it's one of the first places, both on the human side and in the veterinary side, that we're starting to see applications for AI. With that said, from a clinical perspective, the challenging and the controversial piece is whether or not right now, today, in 2022, June 2022, are we at a point where we should be using artificial intelligence in a clinical fashion for diagnostic imaging? And it's my personal opinion that it's too early. And the reason that I say that is that we are implementing these diagnostic tests, these pieces that have an impact on our patients with very limited research behind them. And so there are clinically available products that you can purchase, you can charge your clients for, you can implement in your practice that have some proponents. And then folks like myself on the other side who would really like to see things slow down and start to think about how we're going to use this. So I absolutely think that we need to start to think about research and investigate ways in which AI is going to make lives better and easier for veterinary practitioners. But at the same time, we need to be considering how we do that in a very ethical, very structured way that is going to have the best impact for our patients down the road, have the best impact for our profession down the road. Because just implementing them now without that underlying research, groundwork, and foundation, I think has some really dangerous implications down the road. And, you know, we said it in our manuscript, we talked a little bit about the similarities between understanding AI and understanding an ELISA test. And I think that that's like a really apt connection that veterinarians can maybe make. If an ELISA test were brought to your practice and someone said, let's use this to diagnose disease X, and trust me, it works really well, you'd have a lot of questions like, okay, how well? How often is it a false negative? How often is it a false positive? What are the dimensions behind this that I need to know? Give me some statistics. And for whatever reason, we don't have that data yet to support the clinical use of these products from an AI imaging perspective. And until we do, I don't think that we can safely and effectively implement AI in a clinical setting for veterinary medicine.
Yeah, very good words of caution. Sounds like the proverbial cart before the horse, as often happens. Parminder, if you could talk back to the younger Parminder when you were starting, give me one or two life lessons that you would give to somebody starting out in academia and how to build a program and a collaborative relationship that you have with Ryan. And I think I know who you're talking about in the mastitis arena, but I'll let you speak to that.
So I think the metrics of what success mean is always a sort of a sliding scale. So, and I think that it's always, it's valuable. I find it personally valuable to always think that there's always something else that you can do. And this kind of notion of staying hungry and always stay hungry. So I think that's been a little bit of an ethos for me, try to stay hungry. And a part of that is really just also, stepping outside your comfort zone. Now, if you were to ask me, 5 years ago that I would be in a farm covered with cow dung with a GoPro camera and then, sneaker netting it over to, a high powered Mac and doing some deep learning, I would have laughed in your face. But it's been so incredible, and it wouldn't have happened if, we weren't prepared to sort of step outside your comfort zone. So staying hungry and out of your comfort zone, I think, is really important. The other minor thing I would say is that the other thing I try to do is to try to sort of quote, keep it real, and so you think a lot of folks that, enter academia, you have these really great thoughts and ideas, but they might actually come to fruition for like 10, 20 years. And so you have to kind of think about, what might be sort of small successes that you can achieve, over the sort of a 1 or 2 year cycle. And then sort of medium, larger projects that you can have some success over sort of 3 to 5 year cycles. And then you might have these sort of big picture dream ideas. And so it's always useful to sort of stay connected with all of these things in your themes and try to engineer projects which can touch on these different sort of time points and helps keep you grounded and again, keeping it real.
Parminder, your Jerry Worm stories definitely sound very familiar to me and remind me of my time in vet school. It sounds like there's some really fascinating work being performed in artificial intelligence. Harminder, what is the clinical take-home message from your work that you would like veterinarians to know?
I think it's really, we tried to state that in sort of the last paragraph in that paper where we said, you know, that AI, and just to echo what Ryan just said, you know, that AI is not going to be some panacea for veterinary medicine. It's not going to replace the veterinarian either, but more likely, you know, we're going to see AI as being this promising technology that allows humans and to work more efficiently and provide new insights into managing disorders and hopefully improve the quality of life of animals and those that care for them. So having said that, so it's not going to be, you know, an end all be all to a solution, you know, to everything. We're not going to lose our jobs, or people aren't going to be losing their jobs. But don't ignore AI either. Right? Like don't sleep on this. This stuff is not going away. So the more that you learn about these things, the better prepared you are to deal with the future implementations of AI in our everyday life.
Ryan, what is on the horizon in artificial intelligence as it relates to veterinary medicine?
I think that's a great question. And I think sort of, you know, maybe the title of our AJVR manuscript talks about it a little bit. There's a lot of unmet potential for this. So I think there's a lot of, you know, almost an innumerable number of applications that we could foresee AI being implemented in. I think certainly in a short horizon, you know, within 5 to 10 years, some really good systems for diagnostic imaging will be present. So, you know, as I was stating before, some thought, some research, and some groundwork needs to be laid about how that's going to happen. But I really think that some really nice systems for aiding in veterinarians, be it radiologists and or non-radiologists, to improve the efficiency and accuracy of diagnoses via diagnostic imaging is going to be on that time horizon, as well as from a radiomics piece, which we talked a little bit about as well in the manuscripts, of trying to help differentiate between some of these diseases that we otherwise might need additional testing for. I think there's a huge potential for that. And that's something that Parminder and I are both really excited about, is the possibility to take these radiomic signatures from different diseases and you know, see what we can learn and find out. So I think there's a lot on the horizon. You know, I think one interesting thing that I would just mention is we talked a little bit in our JAVA manuscript about the different types of AI and about general AI versus narrow AI, or strong versus weak AI. And we made the point that, you know, most of the applications that we see now and that we foresee on the horizon are all narrow or weak AI. And for interested listeners or readers of that, you know, since the publication of that, there's been an interesting little controversy at Google where an engineer has been, I guess, let go or has received some reprimand for suggesting that the Google AI might be nearing sentience and maybe nearing more general AI capabilities. So, you know, I think that as the more I learn about this field and the ideas behind it, I think there's some really interesting things on the horizon. And I think, as Parminder said, don't sleep on AI. You know, it might not be here right now in a very clinically applicable way, but it's coming in some way or another. And so keep your eyes to the horizon and see what might be coming next and how it could help improve practice.
This has been a lot of fun, you guys. I've learned even more than I did reading your manuscript. You can really feel your guys' passion and curiosity and friendship, which really makes the work even more fun. And we'll wrap up with just something on a little more personal side, and we'll start with Parminder, and maybe then you can hand it over to Ryan. What is the one thing, Parminder, that you are never without?
I would say my iPhone or my phone, but that sounds a little boring. So I'm going to say my iTunes account. If you pry me away from my iTunes account, I will be violent.
And Ryan, how about you?
I think, unfortunately, I have a similar answer. When I thought about the one thing I'm never without, I mean, it really is my phone, which actually was a very depressing idea. I think like Parminder maybe. I think, you know, you did mention Parminder and I, like, as a friendship, we certainly, you know, we've only met in the last year or so, but really have started to connect over a lot of these pieces. And I know from Parminder's Twitter that he's a big music fan, and I too really appreciate music. And so I don't have an iTunes account, but maybe a Spotify account. So we'd land similarly there, that I don't want to be without my music.
It's pretty amazing how intertwined artificial intelligence is in our own personal lives as well. But thank you so much, Drs. Appleby and Visran. You can read Dr. Appleby's and Visran's full manuscripts in JAFMA and AJVR on our new journals website. I'm Dr. Sarah Wright, joined by Dr. Lisa Fortier. We want to thank each of you for joining us on this episode of the Veterinary Vertex podcast. We love sharing cutting-edge veterinary research with you, and we want to hear from you. Be sure to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you listen to. Thank you.